Hello, I'm Lisa Burwell, the host of V-Speaks Conversations with Heart and Soul, and I am so excited to be sitting down and speaking with Danielle Torley. She has a fascinating story, with the lead being that she is a fire dancer and so much more, if you can believe it. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Well, so much to talk about. So where do we begin? Let's begin with that you are a TED Talks sensation, telling your story, and you have close to 1.4 million views right now. Is that, and I think it's only been 2 or 3 months since it went live?
Early November.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just tell everybody the story of that, and then we'll get into so much of your backstory too, but I think this is a good place to start because you do tell your story, and obviously many, many people in the world are interested in hearing about it.
Yeah, it's been a really amazing, amazing experience, one that I never wanted to have or expected to have. It was never on my radar before this. I'm a part of the Project Management Institute. It's a professional development association for project managers. And I volunteer a lot in the community. I'm president of the local chapter. So when the opportunity came up that TED was partnering with PMI to put on this TED at PMI event, I didn't think much of it, deleted the emails. And then they sent another email out and they said, we're still looking for speakers and applicants. We don't want it to be on project management. We want it to be on life experiences, big ideas. It can be anything. And I saw this. My husband was already in bed. And I looked at the marketing video. I started researching it. And I just got this feeling that I was like, I need to do this. And I kept thinking, okay, I am already way too overcommitted. I've got the kids at home. I've got my full-time job, all the fire dance. There's no way. But I couldn't shake the feeling. Mm-hmm. So I went to sleep at 1 a.m. And I'm like, how am I going to tell Rich that I really need to do this? I got all of my information together, and the next morning I said, okay, there's this opportunity that's come up, and I really think I'm going to do it. And he was very supportive,
of course,
of me,
yes,
throughout the process. But I threw together an application in about a week's time, and it included a video that you had to do talking for a minute about your idea. Mm-hmm. And then a few weeks later, I was down selected, very surprised. Because, as mentioned, it had never been on my radar before.
Right.
And then I got the news that I was selected.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful video.
Yeah.
Very inspiring.
Yeah.
So I know it helped a lot of people, and it's going to continue to help them too, because so many people have adverse things happen in their lives or tragedy like you did. And I think as a people, as the human race, we need to be very aware of helping other people, mm-hmm, and dealing and then helping other people, because that's what we're doing here. We're supposed to be connected, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think that was something that I couldn't quite get into the message, but it's so important. It just kind of shows that everyone has this backstory, mm-hmm, that you don't know about as a colleague, as a friend. I had a lot of friends come up to me afterwards and say, I had no clue. And I was like, well, it's not something I really bring up at birthday parties,
right,
or, you know, nights out or anything. So
how would they?
Right.
Yeah. And
right.
How would they? So I'll give a little bit of a setup here about your story. And then obviously you can take it from there regarding a synopsis of your TED Talks, which is at 6 years old, mm-hmm, living in Michigan on a February snowy cold night, you and your sister sleeping together in a room with your door ajar, woke up to flames in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about what happened that night.
I woke up and I started calling for my parents, and I didn't know what was happening. I was sweating. It was really hot. Couldn't see anything. And then I heard my dad say, D, my mom's name, it's a fire. So she got on the phone to call 911, and then my dad came into my room, and it was a two-story house, and under the second-story windows, there was kind of a ledge, like a little awning, mm-hmm, and he went to go try to open my window. My mom went to go search for my sister in her bedroom. So I remember I was crawling on my hands and knees, because as they teach you in school and kindergarten and stuff, couldn't see anything. I was trying to stay low. I was thinking, you know, stop, drop, and roll, you know, stick, crawl on the ground. And I don't remember being scared at the time. It was just, there was so much happening all at once. And then my mom found my sister, and we went back down to my bedroom where my dad had gotten the window open. So he lifted us onto the window and told us to shout for help. So we were out there in February in Michigan in our little nightgowns, you know, shouting at 1 o'clock in the morning. And this car just drove up, and he drove onto our lawn and tried to get us to jump into his arms, and that was too far. So he climbed on top of his car and was able to carry us down. And we went to a neighbor's house, and the rest I found out later, my dad was still on the roof with my mom, or trying to find my mom. We were brought to the neighbor's house and then over to a house across the street because the firefighters thought that the fire might spread. My dad, eventually the firefighters brought him down from the window, and they found my mom on my bedroom floor, and she'd been pinned down by a dresser that had fallen on her.
So sorry.
So it was, you know, to know that she was right there was very difficult. And she died when she was on the way to the hospital.
So sorry. I lost my mom later in life, and it was difficult. And so I can't imagine losing your mom when you were young. I mean, it's never a good time, but definitely in your formative years, it's must be a whole lot worse.
It was very hard, you know, being so little. And then back in, you know, 1989, my dad was, he was working all the time, and mom stayed at home, and suddenly he had these two little girls. So, you know, just trying to figure out our tempo from there after he got out of the hospital was, you know, we made it through, but it was definitely some.
Well, I'm so surprised. I think I sent you an email last night when I watched your TED Talks for the second or third time, and thinking about like your incredible work history, your triathlons, and then your very, very prestigious, cool jobs that you've had, your pedigree is like, you know, as a young person, cheerleader, you really just had some resolve to obviously keep going and to keep achieving and keep living life. And weirdly, I found that almost one of the most interesting, poignant parts of your story. Not that there aren't so many, because we'll get to the real crux of the conversation about you being a fire dancer soon, which is kind of like the big thing that we're going to talk about. But before we get into that, when you faced your fears with fire after that, talk about the post-traumatic stress that you had, what you and how you dealt with that basically prior to you finding like your relief of over the fear and grief.
My dad was in the hospital for a month. That was a long time for little kids, and we stayed with some family friends for a while. He bought a house on the same street, which was great because we stayed by neighbors and went to the same school, but we also, I mean, the house was right there. But we just, it was just kind of one foot in front of the other for a while. Luckily, he had some great friends and a, you know, a good community of people to help us out and be there for us. And, you know, right in that first week, we had people bringing clothes over and classmates bringing clothes over that we could wear because we didn't have anything. And then when I was about 14, my dad remarried to my stepmother, Beth, who's still around, and, you know, she's great. And, I, you know, like I said, it was just, we just kept trying to move forward. And I don't think I realized the kind of emotional toll that it had on me for a while. As I mentioned in my TED Talk, I had nightmares for a really long time, and they were horrifying. And, you know, it would just take a small thing to just this.
Trip it.
Yeah. So, and I just kind of figured that was something that I would always have to deal with. And then just, you know, kept going to school and kept
doing well.
Just trying to do our things and keep moving forward. And since there was nothing that we could really do about the past, there was still, I guess, there was drive to to do well and right. everything else.
Right. So you went to college, and then on a college trip with your friend, you went to Honduras?
Yes. It was okay. after college.
After college. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is where the story gets interesting, kind of on your, not reformation, but definitely walking out your fears.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us what happened in Honduras.
So we landed in Honduras in Roatan and on the islands, and had only planned to stay for a couple of days before we were going to do some backpacking. And we met some local friends and found out that one of them was a fire dancer. So he had said, "Do you want to come see my show?" So we did. And we were like, "Oh my gosh, we didn't even know this was a thing." You know, coming from Michigan where there's right. not, you know, luau's and stuff like that.
Right.
So we saw him fire dancing. We're like, "This is amazing." And he said, "Do you want me to teach you how?" And yeah, definitely. So we went to the beach the next day, and he brought his poi, which are the with the balls of fire and the chains, mm-hmm. and a staff, I think, which is like the one rod with the fire on both ends, and just showed us a couple tricks. Mm-hmm. So I picked it up, and I don't think I mentioned this, but I used to be on a jump rope team in elementary school.
You did not mention that, because I love jump roping, yes. and I would have remembered that.
Yeah, okay. I was on a competitive
really?
Jump rope
team. Was it double dutchies?
We did double dutch. We did single stuff. We did partner routines
awesome.
And speed and all this kind of stuff.
Okay, this is great.
Yeah, so you can be a fire dancer.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I picked up the poi, and it just kind of came really naturally because it is like jump roping.
Yes,
and,
the cadence know, started, of it.
Right. Uh-huh. Yep, and like wrist flexibility and stuff. And I just loved it. I thought this was so fun.
But were you afraid that it was fire because you had contended with so much fear over fire? Or did seeing it was so beautiful that it sort of like wiped that away?
I don't think I had really thought about the fire part yet.
Okay.
Because we were practicing without fire.
Right.
And we were just on the beach in the daytime.
Oh, okay.
It was just the props with no fuel
Got
or
it.
Anything.
Got it. Okay.
So I picked it up, and I thought, I could do this. I could keep learning this.
Right.
And then it came to the point where we ended up trying it with fire after we came back to Michigan. And I mean, both of us thought, oh, my gosh, this is really loud. It wasn't just the flames. It was the sound of it,
yeah.
you know, with the momentum going by your head. And that's the part
Intense.
That really tripped
yeah.
me up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's when it came back, the waves of the memories and all.
Yes.
Yeah, and fear.
So what I did is I took a plastic grocery bag and I cut it up into strips and I put it onto the practice poi that I had. So it was kind of like a bunch of streamers on the end, and it kind of helped me with that sound.
Uh-huh.
It helped a little bit. It's just, you know, anything to kind of get me used to just the silence of spinning when it wasn't on fire.
Right. And so from how long from then did you transition to actually dancing with fire?
So we picked it up in like September or October. We tried it with fire in the winter. It was still winter in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And just kept practicing whenever we were together so we could safety each other. And it wasn't until I moved to Austin that I started doing it a little bit more, met a couple of people who were fire dancers there, and then really picked it up when I moved to Dubai.
Okay. And what year was that when you went to Dubai?
2006.
Oh, so not too long ago. And tell us, you were working in what sounds like a fascinating, cool job to me in Dubai. Tell us what you were doing.
So in May before I left, so May 2006, I had three opportunities come up at the same time. I was approved, I guess, to start graduate school at University of Texas for Middle Eastern Studies. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yes.
I was excited, UT.
Mm-hmm.
I was offered a job doing college admissions out in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was offered this job to be a proposals coordinator in Dubai. And same time, I'm sitting there with these opportunities going, okay, I see my life going in three different directions. I don't know what to do. And the person who offered me the job in Dubai had said, you know, just come out here for 6 months. Just put your stuff in storage. Come out here. See what you think. Defer graduate school. So I said, okay. So I put my stuff in storage, packed two suitcases, mm-hmm. flew out there. And I had said to him, what's a proposal?
Yeah.
proposal coordinator. What is that exactly? Uh-huh. And he's like, just come out here and we'll teach you. Uh-huh. So I got there and left it. And they were like, we're going to give you a promotion if you'll commit to staying with us for a couple more years. And
that was in like security detail type of thing,
yes.
You said?
Yes. Okay. So it was providing security, physical security for embassies and consulates and other foreign governments over in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Okay. Which you've been to both places.
Yes.
And what was that like?
I felt safe because I was working for a security company, so I had detail with me.
Right.
I don't know if I would have done it otherwise.
Right.
I really enjoyed it. I liked going to see the projects and what we were doing and what the U.S. and like what the governments were doing over there in the communities and in the states. And yeah, it was exciting. I didn't tell my parents when I was going.
Okay.
I told my sister and I said, I don't want them to worry, but you just need to know I'm going. So
here's my cell phone.
I'll tell them when I get back. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, were they okay when they found out that you were over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I said, thank you for not telling us. And thank you for letting us know that you're safe now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So then in Dubai, how did you find somebody again that was doing fire dancing, which is such like, to me, I've never seen it. So it seems like something that I haven't bumped into myself.
So I just use Facebook to find people, search for groups, search for people in the area with posts and stuff like that. And I found a couple of people who did fire dancing. So they had said, yeah, come out, let's meet. And so met up with them and they were just spinning recreationally and became friends. And then suddenly there was this demand for more fire performers out there. So we were like, let's put together a fire troupe. We came up with a name. And
what was the name?
Firestorm.
Okay. Good
we
one.
Came up with a logo and
and you had a team.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's good. We had some really, really fun events. One of the best gigs, probably the best one I've ever done. We had a client come to us and say that they had a client in the Maldives who wanted a fire performance. And were we available? Of course we were available.
Yes.
So they covered our flights, our hotel in an overwater bungalow. They paid for our performance fees as well and all food and drinks.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many were in your troupe?
There were four of us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's so. Do you still keep in touch with them?
I do a little bit.
Yeah. Good. Yep. That's good.
Yeah.
How long is the performance like when you did that gig?
So that one was about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Which was a great experience for 20 minutes.
Yes.
But one set of fire usually is about a song. Mm-hmm. So anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes.
And so I've seen pictures and, you know, we'll show pictures when this airs as well. But you dress up like in beautiful gowns and clothes and everything too, which is really a beautiful visual artistic performance.
Yeah.
Really, really beautiful.
So a lot of times when we have an actual performance, it's a little bit different from the photography that we do.
Okay.
Because I have never performed in a gown yet, although there do tend to be some sequins with some cotton layers underneath to make sure that everything's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is a lot of fun. And it's really pretty when you can see the reflection of the fire off, you know, costume.
Yes. So, and then when you finally did the performance with fire, then what was that like when, you know, you just like worked your way up to learning to deal with the sound of it and then you worked your way up to fire?
Yeah. Yep. And then once we started performing a little bit more, figuring out the business sides of it too, you know, working together and rehearsing and working with clients and invoicing and that sort of thing. We were practicing at least once a week, sometimes twice a week if there was choreography involved. And it just, I don't know, it just, you know, it was like the next step.
Right.
Let's do it. It's kind of, I guess, almost a military mentality, mm-hmm. like, I'm going to do it, so let's just do it.
Right.
It's going to be done.
Right. And then was it kind of overnight or was it a process when you started realizing, oh, wow, this fire that caused me so much grief and heartache, and now I'm actually dancing with fire. Was there like one moment in time where there was a release or was it over time?
It was definitely over time. Because I think too, when I was that age, in my younger younger to mid-20s, there wasn't as much self-reflection as there is kind of now as I'm getting a little bit older. But now that I can look back and see that, I can see that pattern and that path of growth. There was a point, maybe when I was about 30, when I thought, okay, this is like fire dancing the fire. Everything is really full circle.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say it wasn't until I did the TED Talk when I really felt like things were full circle, because that process has enabled me to step out of my own life and become the storyteller for it, instead of just still being in it.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting. So the TED Talks actually, everything prior to was like a tapestry, like things being woven together. And then now that you tell the story, there's your tapestry and there's your journey.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's so really I was
beautiful.
Really able to look back on it and see, okay. And during the process too, it was difficult because there was a lot of introspection that had to go on and reflection that had to happen as I was writing and trying to figure out what to write and how to write and words to use. The creative process going through that was
cathartic.
Yes,
probably.
Very. And then also challenging because they do fact-finding, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, how are they going to fact-find my personal story?
Right.
So that included me like sending across death certificates and records of the fire, contacting the fire department.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes.
Well, I think that's good.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, but wow, that's also, you had to be reflective doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say this before, and I was going to, but I'll just tell it to you right now while we're talking. But I think you have a book in you. Is that
on
the... I think.
I mean, I wouldn't dismiss the idea. I would love to do something like that. And with my job that I work, I do a lot of writing.
Writing, yeah, right.
So there might be.
Mm-hmm. So you met your husband where, Rich?
I met him on an airplane when we were living in Dubai. We had both signed up for a scuba diving trip. And we were in the same group, and the group had met before in Dubai, but I hadn't gone to the meetings because I was working or something. So on the airplane, we're sitting there, and he starts looking out the window, and he's like, oh, we're in Kuala Lumpur. And he's like, look, there's the Petronas Towers. And I was like, oh, that's great. And I put my headphones in, and I put my hood up to my sweatshirt because I wanted to go to sleep. And he's trying to talk to me, and I was like, this British guy. And he goes, hey, so what do you think about those elections? What do you think about Obama? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's trying to talk to me about presidential elections and we're going on this dive trip. And so we started talking and became friends, and we were paired up as dive buddies on the trip. And it just happened from there.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know Rich from the gym, as we talked about, that we all go to the same gym from time to time. We should go more, but
I know, right? Every now and then.
Yeah. So tell me, how did you and your husband, Rich, end up on the Emerald Coast?
So after we started dating, we were in Dubai for a while, maybe a year or so, and we decided to move back to the States. The company that I was working for had an office in Washington, D.C., and he knew someone over here, a British guy with a telecommunications company. So I was like, oh, yeah, I can work for him. And so we just said, okay, let's go. Mm-hmm. And we packed up our stuff and we moved back. We stayed in D.C. for about 3 years, 3.5 years. And then I had a job offer to move down here to Destin. My parents were living in Gulf Shores and we didn't have anyone in Virginia. So we were like, yeah, let's go try that out and live at the beach for a while.
And did you have 3 kids then?
No, we had one.
One, okay.
It's a lot easier moving with one, I think.
Oh,
you
yes.
Know, than, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
All right. So, and you like living here, huh? Because you're a diver too.
We do. And we hadn't been able to dive very much because kids.
Right.
And we actually sold all of our dive gear shortly before we moved here. We didn't realize we were moving, so we sold all of our gear. And then next month, we were headed down here. We did get out once with Shane and Ramona. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
Yeah.
They're great. I've never dove before, so...
It is.
I would love it, but
we went to the underwater museum.
Uh-huh.
And it was just really cool.
Mm, so cool. All right. So now what I'm fascinated about, and I know so many people are too, is tell us about the TED Talks experience. How does it work? How did they find you? How did you find them?
Yes. Okay. So it was a little bit different because it was all virtual. And that's, you know, we talked about that during the interview process and the selection process. And they had said, well, the event's supposed to be in October in Seattle, but that might not happen. So I think as they were still going through that, they're still trying to figure out how this was all going to play out and how long COVID would last. But as June rolled around, they had sent me the selection email, and that was on a Thursday, and I was really excited. We celebrated on the weekend, and they said, okay, on Monday, we have a kickoff meeting. So, you know, I'm trying to rearrange my work schedule and some meetings and stuff, and we get on this kickoff, and it was crazy because we're sitting on this call, and there's people from Europe and Africa and Asia. We're all on this call. We have, you know, 13 of us who are TED speakers. And they start doing introductions, going over kind of the process from a high level. And then they said, okay, your first draft is due to us in 10 days. So I was freaking out a little bit, thinking, okay, I got to like dive into myself, have this emotional journey in 10 days' time and write it all out. So I said to my husband, I need to go away for a couple days. Not with the three kids here and working. And he said, okay. So I went to Austin where I'd spent time, got a hotel room that overlooked the river, didn't watch TV. The only thing I did is watch TED Talks. I read a book that they gave us. I had a journal to write in, and I just would stare out the window and just started writing. So it started coming together, spent the weekend working on it. I'm like, okay, I have a solid first draft. And I sent it to them for review, my coach, my speaker coach, and one of the TED coordinators. And they came back and they were like, nah, we think you could do better than this. It's like, okay, so let's try this again. And
How long did they give you from do better?
There wasn't a specific timeline on it, but I don't think, not that I remember. So I looked at their comments and I thought, you know what? It's just going to be easier to start over. So I just started writing and gave them my second draft. And they're like, this is way more than we were expecting. You're in a good position now. Good. And then we pretty much went off that draft with a couple different tweaks.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then what happened? You were supposed to go out to Seattle.
Yes.
Initially, right?
Right. And then, so then they broke the news to all of us that it would be a virtual event. We started doing some of the other calls and stuff. Well, everything was virtual, but we had a memorization and delivery boot camp. So that was a couple hours long where they went over, you know, different things. You know, posture, you can use notes. We prefer you to not use notes. We started talking a little bit about visuals. We started talking about locations where people would shoot and that sort of thing. So we had that memorization boot camp on a Wednesday, and my production day was the following Thursday. So I had a week to memorize 5 solid pages of text and think about my inflection and the speed that I was going and go faster here, go slower here, slow, you know, slow way down here. And so trying to memorize all of that and also think about delivery it made me realize that I was glad to not be doing it on stage.
Ah.
We could do this in a studio, and we ended up doing, I think, 4 takes.
Okay.
Which was great because then they were able to use the best parts from those takes.
Which was beautifully done. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Really, really good. Well, and so did you tell us already that you were one of something like 1,200 people?
Yes.
That.
And we had found that out later.
Okay,
so
that's pretty impressive. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought maybe, I don't know, 100 people or so would apply for it. So when I asked the question, they said 1,200 people
that's
applied.
Amazing.
I think all of us were kind of, had to take a step back and go, wow, that's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty great. Well, I'm so glad that you got your story out. Because what I like talking to people about and why I even have a podcast, it's an iteration of the magazine, like the next level of the magazine or an offshoot, which is Stories with Heart and Soul, mm-hmm. is the ethos of it. And so from your story, what my hope is that other people can find some keys to redemption, success, joy, you know, not to put you on the spot, but in a nutshell, like what are some words of advice that you could give to someone that was going through a really tough time to sort of unlock the grief and move on?
That's really tough because it's so different for everyone and everyone has different motivators. And one of the things that I had mentioned in my talk was for every trauma, there is a different way to move on. It just so happened that I kind of fell into the fire dancing and that related to my past. And I didn't realize it until going through this process that it's called exposure therapy.
Right.
And it's an actual kind of therapy where you expose yourself to something that scares you. So someone who's afraid of heights might go skydiving or something. And I had just, it just happened for me. But generally, I think it's so important that we kind of pick ourselves up and recognize where we're at and just keep going, you know, and try not to just live in that fog every single day. I had talked about in the talk a couple of paintings that a friend had done for me. And I looked at these paintings and one was black and white and gray. And the other one was, I mean, just every color, you know, a rainbow of all these different colors. And when I thought back to those, I was like, that's who I want to be. I don't want to sit in this fog forever because this is the one life that we have. And, you know, there's all the cliches like every day counts and live in the present and be present and that sort of thing. But when you drill down to it, it is. I mean, this is it.
Exactly.
So really just trying to keep moving forward, embrace it, and find out and figure out what I can do with that.
Thank you. That is really beautiful and very inspiring. Thank you so much for telling your story. Where can our listeners go to watch your TED Talks?
So I can provide you the link, but okay. If they go to TED.com, it's under, right now, it's listed under 10 Talks for Wisdom and Grief or Grief and Wisdom or something like that. So it was actually chosen as one of 10 that they featured, which was really exciting.
Another wow.
Yes. Yeah. When that happened, yeah. I didn't know about it. My husband was like, "What? You're on the homepage again."
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Danielle Torley, thank you so much for being with us. So appreciate your time. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see you do some fire dancing
in
the near future
soon,
if I'm able to.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for watching V Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.